Our main speaker for tonight, I am so excited about. We have Lisa Fisher with us. And if you've been here before, she's spoken to us in the past, and it's always just wonderful, really encouraging. And so I'm excited that she's back. If you have not heard from Lisa before, here's a little bit about her. She lives in Springfield with her husband, Tim. They have three adult children, and their daughters both got married in the past year. So lots of celebration. And then she gave me some nouns that mark her life. Pastor's daughter, sister, pastor's wife, mother, teacher, coach, mentor, cook, speaker, and friend. So please welcome Lisa Fisher.
Thanks, guys, for the privilege of letting me come and talk with you tonight a little bit about friendship. When I was thinking about how powerful friendship is and how it can change your life and really inspire you in ways that have ramifications that go on and on, I thought of two men. I know we're not men, but two men that their friendship has had a profound effect in the 20th century and into our lives too. And those two men would be C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien. And these two men had a friendship that developed in their 20s, and it came alongside of something that they loved. They learned that they loved literature, they loved mystical tales, they loved kind of learning about just faraway lands. And because that friendship was nourished and spent time together and they journeyed, we got to benefit from that, from the Chronicles of Narnia and the Lord of the Rings. And that both was born out of this rich, deep friendship. And as I kind of looked into C.S. Lewis's life, and a man that has very gifted at writing, I saw how much he had to say about friendship. So I took a lot of C.S. Lewis's quotes tonight to kind of tell my story of what I've learned about friendship in my life and how it's impacted me. And so I'm just going to use C.S. Lewis's words to help springboard some of my thoughts. And the first quote that C.S. Lewis that I have is, "Friendship is unnecessary, like philosophy, like art. It has no survival value. Rather, it is one of those things which, given value, to survive." So, to survival. So I don't totally agree with that, because I think as a young mom, you need a friend to survive. It's almost imperative that you have someone that's walking with you on this road. But I just thought about how, as moms, we just, as Bev said, so there's so many things that she said that I'll just echo, because she said it great. We need someone to say to us, "No, you're not crazy. Oh, you're really actually having those thoughts about your children? Oh, I've had those too." And to be able to validate some of just the emotions and even the exhaustion. "Can you believe my husband wanted to have sex? I was so tired. Can you believe he even thought that?" And for you not to have this look that someone else doesn't understand exactly what you're going through. It just is so encouraging. C.S. Lewis also says that when he defined what a Christian friendship was, he said, "For a Christian, there's strictly no chances. A secret master of ceremony has been at work. Christ, who said to his disciples, 'Ye have not chosen me, but I have chosen you,' can truly say to every group of Christian friends, 'Ye have not chosen one another, but I have chosen you for one another.' The friendship is not a reward for our discriminative good taste in finding one another out. It is the instrument by which God reveals to each of us the beauty of others." I think that's well said. But with that, when you kind of think about that Anna Green Gables, "I know your soul" kind of friendship, often it gets us wanting. I don't know about what your story is with friendship, but I know that I kind of really struggled with being a friend with women. I was one of those girls that always had a boyfriend. I dated my husband from the time I was a junior in high school, and that was my soulmate. That's who I kind of told my inner self to. And And I felt very comfortable hanging out with the guys. That wasn't something that was hard for me. And I had girlfriends. It wasn't like I didn't have girlfriends, but I always thought, what would that be like to have that friendship that they talk about? That's like, she completes my thought, she knows what I'm thinking. And I didn't experience that. And I longed for it. And when I got married, I realized it really wasn't a wise idea to have friends with other guys. And I could have friends with Tim, but that only went so far. And so I started this really longing of my soul that I would get to experience what a friendship was. I remember the first friend that I had when I started teaching, my early years teaching, and it was one of those friends I thought, oh, this is it, I got it, I know what this feels like now. And we were friends for 5 years, and we both started having children about the same time. But it was a really revealing event in my life that after spending 5 years with this friend, thinking I knew her, she knew me, we did things with each other, with our husbands, that I found out at the end of it that I had been living a lie, that I didn't really know what was going on in her life, that there were things that were so destructive that were happening in her life, and she never had shared them. And it kind of rocked me, like, yeah, I guess I really don't have the tools to be a friend. I really don't know what it's ever going to be like to have a friend. And walked away from that, got pregnant, started having kids, and then this longing to have this connection with a woman even grew more. I remember praying and asking the Lord, can I just have a friend? Can I know what that looks like? And C.S. Lewis also says, there is a far, far better thing ahead than that which lies behind. And there was a time when I sat in MOPS in here and wanted to know what it was like to have a friend. And I knew what my past was, and yet I didn't see in my future any of this deep friendship happening. And during the time when I was right in your stage, I became friends with a woman. Our daughters were born only 5 months apart from each other, and we started having play dates. And from that, I got to experience initially a little bit what this friendship looks like. I tell Diana Warden that she taught me what it was like to have a friend, that she opened up what it looked like to have a deep level friendship. Though our hobbies are not always the same, our interests don't always look the same, and we might not have exactly the same story in all of our lives, God brought us together as your young moms, and little by little, I got to experience what it looked like to have a friend. For the last 25 years, that friendship has grown. We have ebbed and flowed through the different seasons of our lives, but we have richly benefited from each other breathing healing for me into what it was like to have a friend, and for her also in me. And I just can't say how powerful that has been in my life. It really does say this quote well. Friendship is born at the moment when one person says to another, what, you too? I thought I was the only one. And that's what my friendship with Diana Warden has done in my life, and I am forever grateful. I also see that during that same time, God brought other women into my life, women that were facing the same direction, going and doing the same interests that I was doing. You know, if you have your eyes open while you're doing whatever service or whatever ministry you're doing in your life, and if you can see who God's brought along beside you during that time, it really is an important time that God can use in your life to transport you from not just being on the surface, but getting to know someone. There's something about doing something together, having a common interest, that just breeds deeper friendships. Bethany Drum, who is outside rocking a baby right now, was one of those women that God brought in that season of my life. We both had children at this around the same time, and we were helping run the children's childcare for the women's Bible studies here at Emmanuel. And it was during that season that I learned the gift of how friendship begets friendship. And because I became friends with Bethany, it also allowed me to have other friends. She introduced me to Lisa Hartman, who at that time, we both had a son that was born at about the exact same time. And because of that, I now see 20 years later how two little boys that were in a playgroup when they were in their preschool years would spend every week together. We rotated and took turns. Each mom had a week with the boys. How 20 years later, this friendship has grown and has such depth for a boy that's 20 years old to be able to write and communicate and say publicly how much a friendship means to him and to each other. Michael spent a lot of time in my house this past summer, and I know Joe spent a lot of How's that? So I just want you to see that sometimes when you're doing service, look around to see who it is that God has brought in your life right beside you, just with the same interest and the same goals, because they might be the people that you're going to have for the rest of your life, and they might have benefits for your children that you can't even imagine. You know, just the benefit of my son having a breakup from a girl that he had dated for 3 years in high school, and then Michael experiencing the same thing a year later, and how they could, guys don't always talk on emotional levels. It's not a normal phenomena. But for them to be able to do that was such a gift. And who did I ever think that would happen when they were in a playgroup when they were in preschool? You know, what draws people to be friends is that they see the same truth and they share it. As Bev said, one of the powerful tools is when you get to become friends with someone that you're actually opening up scripture with and studying. When I say that Daniel Warden helped me learn that friendship begets friendship, we did Thursday morning Bible study for over 8 years together here. And then from that, a group of women that came from that did another 10 years of meeting together on Friday mornings. And from that, now Diane and I get together once a week and study scripture. It has transformed what friendship means to me, because we have prayed together for our children. We have prayed together for life and the struggles of marriage, and it has been powerful. And the avenue is that we're going and looking to see what God's word has to say about life, and then putting that alongside of praying for each other. It's had a profound effect on my life, and I know that marrying the two of those together is really a powerful way to build incredible deep friendships. But I would say the most transformative thing that I've learned about friendship has come from the next quote, which is, Eros will make naked bodies, friendship makes naked personalities. Eros is that Greek word for passion, and it's used in the New Testament, usually in the context of marital love. But naked friendship, that idea of transparency, has truly just been so profound in my life, because I have seen what the power is to have a few friends in your life that really know your skinny of you. I mean, not really the skinny of you, but the know your real heart. I mean, they know where you continually mess up. They know your fatal flaws. They know that what you try so hard for other people not to ever find out. And they listen, and that's one of the scariest things, to truly open up to someone and to say, you know, this is who I am. This is what it looks like. This is what it looks like when I do this comparison thing. I don't want to do it. I walk in the room and go, okay, who am I like? Who am I not like? What did you know? This is what I struggle with. All the things that are so under the surface. When you can verbalize that with another friend, and you can experience what that transparency is. When they know what your sin issue is, when you can say, you know, this is what I long for not to be my story, but it's been my story over and over again. Just the freedom that breathes to know that another person knows that and still loves you and accepts you. It is transformative. And if you hear nothing else tonight, hear finding a safe person to be able to tell who you really are is a powerful weapon to free you on the inside. It is a powerful weapon to help that entanglement that your enemy doesn't want you to have that untangled. He wants you to not share who you are, because in that is power, and the power of shame holds us. And so James 5:16 says, confess your sins one to another and pray for one another, and that there might be healing. And I have found out that has been healing of my soul. And so I champion it and tell people to look for it. And even though it's scary, it is so rewarding. And I would chase you to do that and do it well. But I do know that there is a cost to friendship. I know that having true friends, you know, that trust you and you tell them their secret, and that remembering prayer, that is the heart of what a friend really is, and that breaks it down like nothing else does. But I also know that, love is not cheap. And to unselfishly think about other people costs you. It costs you time. It costs you money. It costs you energy. It costs you emotion. And sometimes you'll never, ever get it reciprocated. And sometimes that in and of itself is wounding. But to unselfishly love someone is, it's the freedom that friendship brings when you're not keeping score, when you're reminding yourself that you're there to be a friend and to love. But there also are costs, and you are going to be burned in a friendship. For me to tell you that you're never not going to be hurt by another woman, I mean, middle school girls are pretty tough. I work with middle school girls, and they can tear each other apart, but we can too. And we can do it in ways that are almost detached in today's world, that seem so almost innocent, but so digging as women. And sometimes there is a cost to friendship. You know, there's betrayal. I told you about that deep period, but I'm still experiencing that. I did in August, just out of the blue, some woman that I have been really close to in the last 10 years, I just felt a sting that I did not see coming, and it hurt, and I cried. And that's the cost of friendship. But it's worth the cost. It's worth taking the risk. And if you love deeply, you're going to be hurt. That's part of loving. But don't let that fear hold you from experiencing what friendship is, because it can be paralyzing. You know, I'm not going to let myself be wounded again. I'm not going to let that happen to me again. But just know that that is possible. Know that loving deeply has the risk of being hurt. When I turned 50, my husband gave me probably one of the best gifts he's ever given me, besides the surprise party that I was totally surprised at, because I'm normally not surprised at things I usually find out. He had a group of my friends. He sent in letters and pictures, and he put together a friend book. And when I think of that woman that I was in my 20s, who longed for a friend, who begged God that I would experience what deep friendship looked like, and have a book of 25 women that I consider deep, rich, lifers that have loved me and I could go to with a drop of the hat and experience life. I would say that was one of my greatest gifts, just to have that and to see. And so I wrote down some of the things that they wrote to me as practical things to tell you about what I've learned about friendship, because I've learned it through them. They have impacted me and changed me in the area of friendship. And so just some practical things I've learned through them, and then some practical things on my own that I want to take away for you to remember. The first thing they told me was the things that they learned from our friendship was to listen well, to love God and love to pour him into your friendship, how important that is to have that in a friend. That distance and closeness, I've had two of my really close friends in the last 10 years move out of the area. This is a transient area. It happens a lot. You get close, you get deep, and then people leave. And just what it means to continue into a friendship after the distance is there, and how you do that, and how you navigate still being friends when you have time away. Be an open book. It frees up others for transparency. The more that you display transparency, the more you breathe freedom into a friendship to have transparency and to speak truth in love. Sometimes friends have to tell each other hard things. And to do that and wrap it in love is really important. Just some things, practical things that I would not want to walk away without saying to you is, friends don't always look the same. Don't box yourself into only being friends with other moms. Don't box yourself into not experiencing what it's like to be a friend of a single woman that's walking the same route that you're walking right now, that would love to sit down at a table with a family and see little kids interact with their parents. Look for who they are that you're around. Some of the best friends that I've had in life are single. And one of those I talked to today, and we were just talking about, she goes, not only did we bridge the you're married, I'm single, but you've also taught me how to bridge generations. She's two decades younger than I am, but we have walked life together since she was in high school, and it's been so rich. So don't just box yourself into being a friend with someone that's in the same age group that you are. There are women that are younger than you that would benefit so greatly from spending time with you, from you going out with them for coffee. This area is one of the highest areas for single women that are just working in the workforce, and they would have such a benefit from being your friend. And also there are women that will never be moms. Their stories are that having children just isn't in the cards for them. And two of my closest friends are in their 40s and they've never experienced motherhood. Not that they haven't dreamed of it, not that they haven't paid some money to try to make their bodies have that happen, but that has been their story. And sometimes as moms, we run away from that because we see the pain and we don't want to, you know, have them be hurt by just hanging out with us. But there is some real power for them just to be able to be involved in your kids' lives and have the benefit of seeing the different stages. Don't be afraid of that. One of my dearest friends is my oldest friend. She is the neighbor that's right across the street from my house. I have a Mary rule. My rule for Mary is if Mary calls, no matter what I'm doing, I'm going to go hang out with Mary. Mary's 88 years old. We became friends when she was in her 60s, and I just moved in, a young mom with little kids, my two daughters. I've walked Mary through the death of her son, or of her husband, and now she's dating. a 91-year-old man, so we talk about that. But Mary has told me for 20 years to get younger friends. I told her I was coming to talk tonight to you, and she goes, "You are going to tell them the advice I give you, get younger friends." I said, "Yes, Mary, I'll tell them." I always tell my friends to get younger friends. But the new friends that God's brought into my life in the last year are two younger women that are a little older than my daughter's age. So whether they're 88 years old or they're stages behind, your friends don't have to look just like you. But it's important to be open to having all kinds of friends. And you'll benefit from their life experience and their story, even if it doesn't look like yours. And next two things are to have traditions with your friends. Have things that mark your friendship. Just these are the things. Maybe it's a certain time of year that you go out for lunch, or a certain time of the year. It's going to change. Life adventures are going to happen. I have a friend. Some of you might go to her as your doctor, but we have a standing tennis date. It's every year on our birthday. We're going to play tennis. That's just what we've done for 15 years now. We usually play tennis and then go and go to the pool, and we talk about life. But there are other friends that there are just things that we have marked our friendship with. And it's just really sweet to have a certain thing that's wrapped around this friendship. And when you do life for a long time with a friend and then you have those markers, it just is a powerful and just useful thing for with friendship. And the last thing I would say is manage your expectations with your friendships. You know, expectations are you writing the story into the relationship, what you want to see happen, what you've already predetermined should be happening, and they can be relational killers. So just know that that is true, that we as women often breathe in what our expectations should be for a friend, and give friends grace. They're not going to live up to your expectations, and you're not going to live up to theirs. But just mentally put that in your notes, okay? So this might not work. I say that friendships are a powerful thing. C.S. Lewis and Tolkien's friendship was Tolkien's friendship to C.S. Lewis was incredibly powerful, because it was through Tolkien's reasoning, talking over and over again with C.S. Lewis, that Tolkien was able to make the connection so C.S. Lewis could see the difference, the combination of reasoning and imagination, and how that truly played out in the life story of the gospel. And how the great story, I can't say it better than it's written, and you probably can't even read it. The gospel had all the qualities of the great human of a human story, but the portrait of a true event. God, the storyteller, entered his own story in the flesh and brought a joyous conclusion from a tragic situation. Suddenly, Lewis could see that the nourishment he had always received from a great myth and fantasy stories was a taste of the greatest, the truest of life, the death, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Yes, friendships can change. They can make a lasting change. But Jesus tells us before he leaves, "This I tell you, to love one another just as I have loved you. No one has greater love than this, gives his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I tell you. I cannot call you servants that I own anymore. A servant does not know what his owner is doing. I call you friends because I have told you everything that I have heard from the Father." And God calls us to friendship with him, and that's what all the earth is. It's a little picture of what friendship means to be friends with God. Thank you.